Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit nettlemeadowcheeseandspirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, meadowcheeseandspirits.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer, and I'm really excited about today's show. We're talking about an animal I know very, very little about. We're talking about manatees. So we're talking with Dr. Katie Tripp of SaveTheManatees.org, located down in Florida. So I'd like to just get started. Katie, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. How are you today?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Good. So I'd like to just get started because I know our New York audience probably knows about as much as about manatees as I do. So if it's okay with you, let's just dive right in. So first question, what are manatees?
Manatees are large aquatic marine mammals. They average about 10 feet in length and weigh 1,000 pounds as adults. They're herbivores. I kind of call them the hippies of the marine world. They're very peaceful. They don't bother anybody. They don't have any enemies. So they're just really, really cool animals.
Wow. I didn't realize they got that big. I lived in Florida for a while in the intercoastal, and I never saw any that large. I mean, they were definitely huge, but 10 feet, that's enormous. My God.
And that's just an average.
Oh my God, that's kind of like, yikes. I mean, they're amazing animals, and there's just, you know, you see them rarely when you're living on the intercoastal. You see them just enough to be like, what is that? And they go on their way, and then they come on back. But yeah, they're super friendly and really, really sweet. Are they found all over the world?
I'm sorry, we actually don't have a super great connection. Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. Are they located all over the world?
Yes, in warmer waters. So if you kind of drew a line around the middle of the earth, you can find them in a number of places, Central and South America, of course, Florida, West Africa, and then they have a sort of a cousin that lives over in Indonesia and Australia called the dugong.
Oh, wow. And so I'm assuming there are many different kinds of manatees as well?
Yeah, so the manatees we have in the U.S. are called Florida manatees, and they're part of a larger species called the West Indian manatee, which is going to be the manatee that lives all through the Caribbean and Central and Northern South America.
Okay.
And then in the Amazon River Basin of South America, you've got Amazonian manatees, and they live just strictly within the Amazon River. And then over in West Africa, the West African manatee. And then, as I mentioned, the dugong over there towards Australia.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good amount. I mean, it's something that, it's funny because I've really never heard of manatees anywhere except like on the U.S. southern coast. So it's nice to hear. I mean, it kind of is like, they've got to be somewhere else too, don't they? You know, so it's nice to hear that they are kind of spread out around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And they face a lot of issues, you know, in those other places, similar to what they face here in the States, you know, being affected by the fact that so many people live close to the coast. And in certain countries, there are still hunting pressures. And but they inhabit the same types of environments all over the world. And those are well sought after by people, which can lead to some conflict.
Yeah. And so, like, the hunting situation, is that for meat or is that for trophy? Or why are they shooting, killing these things?
Meat, and there's some use for the bones. And so we've been involved in a project in Nigeria working with a collaborator over there to try to provide villages with alternative livelihoods. You know, conservation kind of breaks down if you just walk in someplace and say, you can't do that anymore because I said so.
Yeah, totally.
And so anytime we work in the community, we try to, explain the importance of manatees to the ecosystem, explain the history. You know, in a lot of cultures, manatees were, you know, they were revered. And when you lose the traditions, you kind of lose some of that importance that had actually protected animals. And so trying to connect people back with their heritage and then to give them an alternative. You know, the manatees are hunted for food, and so you have to be able to give people something else that they can eat and another way that they can make money. And so we've had good success in Nigeria with getting them to stop hunting in a few of these villages. But yes, they're apparently the meat is quite good, and at you know, 1,000 pounds, it lasts a while. So,
yeah,
you need to provide a good alternative.
And so, is there any like aphrodisiac mysticism that goes with them, like the rhino, for example? So it makes them even more precious.
I think in certain cultures there's something. I think in certain cultures manatees are signs of fertility, so there may be something with bones or certain organs.
Mm-hmm.
I think the primary source is meat, but you know, as with a lot of animals, with a lot of cultures, they find multiple utilities for
yeah, totally,
for those sorts of things. Yeah.
And so this is a question I'm going to ask you, and it has you're way overqualified for this question, but it's something that actually a bunch of people asked me as soon as they heard I was doing this show. They want to know if manatees were what was considered to be the original mermaids.
Yeah, that's how the legend goes. So, theoretically, when Christopher Columbus sailed over this way, he may have seen manatees with, seaweed on their head or something like that. But the name, so manatees belong to an order of animals called the Sirenians.
Mm-hmm.
And the sirens actually go all the way back to, Odysseus and Odyssey. And, they were trying to lure him to shore. And so that's how manatees came to be called the Sirenians, because whomever these early explorers were seemed to think that maybe that's what they were seeing over this way. So, there's plenty of jokes about, well, I don't know how long you'd have to be at sea.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
But, yeah, that's how the story goes.
And so, do manatees have, some kind of alluring call that would, you know what I mean? Because of the Odyssey, it's like, oh, and they had this song that just dragged us in. Is this something, if you heard a manatee, you'd be like, oh, my God, what is that?
No, they emit little clicks and squeals that, for the most part, you have to be in the water to hear. So I would imagine the early explorers based their assessment mostly on a visual they were seeing. I doubt they were hearing, except maybe the voices in their head. I don't know.
It's interesting because it's my brain is so desperate to kind of put them in a classification that I keep thinking that they're like seals. So I just assume they're going to make all the barking sounds that seals can make and kind of have that vocabulary.
Yeah, no, they're very quiet, and a lot of people think they're related to either whales or dolphins or walruses or seals. Their closest elephant is, their closest, spoiler alert, their closest relative is the elephant, is what I was trying to say. And that always surprises folks that they're actually more closely related to elephants than they are to any other marine mammal.
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away by that, actually. It's like, that was the last thing I was expecting you to say, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, but if you think about it, there are definitely some similarities. So
mm-hmm.
The skin is very similar to an elephant. When you think about an elephant and the way that it feeds, the way that it uses its trunk,
mm-hmm.
It has a very good acuity with the trunk.
Yeah.
A manatee's face is the exact same way. They have very muscular mouth, and they can grab things, and it's just like an elephant's trunk. And, manatees at one point lived on the land, and you can see little vestiges of this. If you
mm-hmm.
take an x-ray of their front flippers, it looks just like finger bones.
Oh, wow.
And they've constructed skeletons of what they think, the predecessors of manatees looked like 50 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So back when the Earth was one super squished together continent, you can imagine how maybe the elephants went one way and
other
animals started sort of, becoming more aquatic. And then, the plates shifted and all that. And we are where we are today. But So when you go back that far, you see how maybe.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm still here like, no, it's the walrus, I swear, the bullnose seal or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, what are the manatees' breeding habits? Do they, are they like a social group, or tell us about that?
The mating habits?
Yeah.
The question. So they don't mate for life or anything like that. They tend to do most of their mating in the warmer months. You may see some practicing in the winter. but they form these large, what are called mating herds,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, not always, but it's not uncommon to see multiple males interested in a single female. And these things can go on for hours or for days.
Oh, wow.
This time of year, you know, there will be calls going into the state biologist about, you know, a group of stranded manatees, because what we think actually happens is that the female is either not ready to mate or she needs a break. And so she will intentionally beach herself. And so then all the males kind of follow. And manatees are unlike, you know, dolphins. If you see a bunch of dolphins on the beach or whales, it's problematic.
Yeah.
You know, their lungs can't sustain it, but manatees can actually be beached for a certain amount of time.
Oh, wow.
So people, you know, there's kind of an educational campaign around, you know, don't push them back in.
Yeah.
But don't push them back in, because if the female is actually in need of some R&R, she's definitely not going to be happy with you.
Yeah, seriously.
Putting her back into the fray. So that's kind of how they mate. And the females will usually give birth to one calf.
Mm-hmm.
Pregnancy lasts just about a year.
Okay.
Twins occur about 1% of the time, so that's always kind of an amazing thing to see if you see a mama with two little
Aww.
Twins. The other, I think, wonderful, amazing thing that manatees do is adopt.
You'll see
an orphan manatee and you know, another manatee will take up with it. When they're in the springs in the wintertime, you'll see manatees park their babies with another manatee while they go out to feed. So
wow.
I feel like there's a camaraderie around the females, a little more so than with the males. But they don't travel in pods.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual to just see a solitary, you know, manatee wandering around. So no really complicated social structure like some other marine mammals.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing. Like, I lived on the intercoastal, and it was like we would see a manatee. You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, look, a school of manatees or like a couple,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. And so how long do they live typically?
How long do they live? They can live more than 65 years. There's actually
wow.
a manatee in captivity. He's been in captivity since he was a newborn, and he's about to turn either 67 or 68.
My God.
And he's now kind of the, you know, the answer to that question.
Totally.
You know, the number was always like, well, we think they can live at least 65 years. And then the older and older that Snooty gets, we're like, well, they 66, 67, 68. But unfortunately, in the wild, most manatees do not live that long.
Yeah.
We know that there are some that are making it to 20 and 30 because of, you know, photo ID records. But it's not uncommon for them to actually die a lot sooner than that, even.
Mm.
Just because of the threat. You know, we do have problems with watercraft strikes down here.
Yeah.
We have other, you know, toxins in the water, things like that. So we have very few manatees dying of old age, which is a problem.
Mm. Well, yeah, that makes sense. And so you were saying that, you know, they are kind of loners and things like that. Is there a social structure between the adults, or is it really just kind of like once the babies grow up, it's like you're on your own, kid?
Yeah, it's a pretty loose association among the adults.
Mm-hmm.
The bond between the mother and her calf is certainly the strongest one that we see.
Mm-hmm.
And that can last up to 2 years, during which time, you know, that calf is really learning all the tools of the trade on how to be a manatee. But again, they do really interesting things. There was a manatee in my neighborhood recently who had gone into captivity as a pretty young calf, and so he needed to be raised in captivity before he was big enough to be released.
Yeah.
So they released him with other animals, and he moved into my neighborhood, and there was a mother with a calf, and he started just kind of buddying around with them.
Oh, wow.
And it seemed like she was teaching him, you know, while she was teaching her calf. So there's no hard and fast rules, but
yeah.
there are definitely some manatees that, you know, seem to form those associations. And that's just amazing to me when that happens. I mean, I just think that's so neat.
Yeah, I'm blown away. I mean, there's so many different mammalian species where if something's orphaned, it's like, well, kid, you're on your own. You know, the fact that they're willing to, like, help each other out is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's, yeah, it's one of my favorite qualities about them.
And then you said that they're herbivores, but what do they eat and how much?
So they can eat vegetation that's rooted, you know, at the bottom of the water,
mm-hmm.
floating vegetation. Those amazing lips that we were talking about that are like the elephant trunk really allow them to grab just about anything. So
oh, nice.
They can, you know, that's what allows them to grab floating vegetation or to, you know, crop down seagrasses or even reach up and they can, you know, grab leaves off of trees, you know, those sorts of things.
Wow.
And yeah, and so so they eat a wide diversity of things. They'd be called a generalist.
Okay.
And as far as amounts, the number that's thrown around on a good day, you know, if the manatees are really traveling and it's warm and they have good access to all the grass beds and things,
mm-hmm.
they can eat, you know, they could eat up to 10% of their body weight a day.
Wow.
Now, when they're, you know, hunkered down in the springs in the wintertime to stay warm, they can fast
mm-hmm.
for days, if not weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So 10's on the high end, you know, it's probably somewhere between 5 and 10, depending on the manatee. The 10% might have come from manatees in captivity who
totally.
Are definitely at the upper end of the weight spectrum because they're not, you know, traveling and burning a lot of calories. So, yeah, so those manatees are quite large.
Okay, so we're going to take a break in a minute, but I have to ask you this before the break or I will forget. When you're talking about manatees traveling, like, what kind of distances are you talking about?
It really depends on the manatee. I mean, there are some manatees that probably spend the whole year within, you know, a 10-mile radius,
mm-hmm.
and there are other manatees who will travel hundreds of miles. So it really depends on the individual, but they can cruise when they want to.
It's such a trip that there is no real generalization with these guys that is like, well, some like to travel, some like to stay at home. Yeah, it's really, really
yeah,
cool.
It's like, you know, it's like the city mouse and the country mouse. You know, it seems like there are definitely manatees who have different preferences. You know, there are manatees that hang out down in Miami, and I go down there, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't understand why you live here.
Yeah, me too.
You know, there are other manatees that are kind of in these backwoods areas, and I'm like, oh, this is more like it. It seems like a better place to be, but yeah, they're so individual. I think that's like really a take home, is they just do seem to have these individual choices that they make and these individual personalities, and it's just fascinating.
This is so cool. All right, so Katie, we need to take a quick break. It's going to be about a minute. We are talking about manatees with Dr. Katie Tripp of SaveTheManatees.org. We'll be back shortly.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA. Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
And we are back. You're listening to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I am talking to Dr. Katie Tripp all about manatees. It's fascinating. So, Katie, one thing I've discovered is the more interviews I do with animal experts, the more I find that each animal actually has a job or a purpose on this planet. What do you think it is that manatees do?
I'm sorry, I only heard the second half of the question.
Oh, no problem. The more I do this, the more I discover that animals have a certain job. Like each animal will have something it has to do for the planet. What do you think that job is for manatees?
So historically, because manatees eat vegetation, they had somewhat of a role in keeping waterways clear. So with the weather in Florida here, there are certain plants that can really grow like gangbusters and clog waterways.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's thought that that was, you know, a service that they provided would be to, you know, clear out the waterways from some of the vegetation. But, you know, they're different, you know, in that they are herbivores. You know, they're not really a keystone species the way some others are, but, mm-hmm. you know, grazers, which manatees are, they promote new growth of seagrass.
Mm.
So manatees, sea turtles, you know, it's like if you have a goat, you know, they'll eat down the grass and then it grows again. Or like if you mow your lawn, it promotes new growth.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely thought that that's a role that, you know, the different aquatic herbivores play, and manatees are certainly the largest of those.
Cool. And so we touched on it quickly, but what are the biggest threats to manatees?
Well, they're really affected by the pollution that goes in the waterways.
Mm-hmm.
Manatees live so close to shore, so anything that's running off into our coastal waters, if it's from fertilizer use, agriculture,
mm-hmm.
you know, mining activities, stormwater, you know, all of those things are putting nutrients in the water, and when we get too many nutrients in the water, we get algae blooms.
Yeah.
And when you have algae blooms, you block out the sunlight, and then the seagrasses can't grow. Not only can't grow, sometimes they die completely because, you know, they can't photosynthesize.
Oh, wow.
And so we have some of that. There are other organisms that will come on shore, little microscopic things,
mm-hmm.
and they feed on nutrients, and so it's natural that these things are blowing around out there in the water. But if they come inshore and they find a smorgasbord of nutrients, they bloom.
Yeah.
And one of these things is called red tide,
mm-hmm.
and red tide is a neurotoxin. And so for the manatees just swimming in the water, if this red tide is present, it gives them seizures.
Oh, wow.
If you're a marine mammal who needs to come up to the surface to breathe and
yeah.
have your wits about you, having a seizure is potentially fatal.
Wow.
And so that's what actually happens, is that we see manatees, they drown from this toxin. And so it's one of those things that, yes, it's a natural occurrence, but, you know, the fact that when it does come inshore, it finds just all these nutrients that have been put in the water, you know, that's the unnatural part of it. The other issue we have is with watercraft. You know, Florida is such a popular state for boating,
yeah.
and, you know, just trying to educate people that manatees are here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have slow speed zones all the places we need them.
Yeah.
There's no mandatory boater education. There's
yeah.
no licensing. And so, you know, people come on vacation and they just don't really think about it. And so we try to do a lot of outreach to, you know, people who are renting boats to the public and jet skis and just trying to let manatees be on people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the biggest thing. You know, if you don't know you're looking for something,
then yeah, totally.
You're not going to realize when you've encountered it. So that's a biggie. And then we also, you know, going back to kind of the habitat issue, manatees do need warm water, even
mm-hmm.
though they look like they are well endowed with fat.
Yeah.
They're not. And they're very susceptible to water temperatures below 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, wow.
So protecting our natural springs, which stay at 72 degrees all year, is really important. And the you know, why it becomes an issue to do that is because the springs are where groundwater from the aquifer comes mm-hmm. up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also where most of Florida's drinking water comes from. So the more people we have, you know, the more demands we have on our water, the lower the flow there is at springs. And of course, the springs are also affected by nutrients and those same things as the coastal waters. But so those are really big ones. You know, manatees don't have any predators, but we as humans have certainly caused them a load of problems since we moved in down here.
So are they endangered anywhere?
They are still endangered
under
the Federal Endangered Species Act.
Oh.
There is a petition underway to change that status and to make them a threatened species.
Mm-hmm.
And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is deliberating about that right now. They accepted public comment earlier in the year, and they heard from us and from our supporters. We definitely have concerns with doing it now. You know, there have been great strides made, and there's been so much effort to try to protect the species, but we're really at a crossroads. I mean, we have some serious water quality issues going on down here.
Yeah.
There is that concern about the winter habitat with the economy coming back up again. I mean, this year we're on pace to break the annual, you know, a record for watercraft mortality for these animals. You know, we really need to spend the time and effort to make sure that we're really securing their future. So that is out there, and we're not sure how that'll, you know, will happen. We're certainly ready to respond to it when we hear the decision, but we'd certainly much rather spend our, you know, our time and effort in making sure the protections are in place instead of having to, you know, go to court or do anything like that.
Exactly, and it's just so much time and money in order to do that too, you know, or could just a discussion could help it.
Absolutely. For everybody, and we've essentially said that, you know, I mean, it's like, let's work together and get this done. It's not that it should never be done ever, but what would be the point of coming, you know, getting here and then just sort of walking away? It's like, you know, you don't walk out of a game in the third quarter.
Totally.
You know, you've got to finish it. You got to see it through. So that's really the message that we're trying to get across, and we certainly want to be a part of that group that sits at the table and tries to figure out. I mean, there's some really hard things that need to be figured out for the future, and we're ready to roll up our sleeves and do it.
Nice.
You know, we need the agencies to work with us.
Nice. I mean, that's one of the things I remember the most is that, you know, we were in a sleeping town on the intercoastal, and it was my birthday, and I stole a friend of mine's canoe to go over to the other side to get to the Atlantic. And, you know, it was just me and a friend of mine in a canoe, and all of a sudden this manatee shows up, and it's like they're so friendly and they're so curious. You know, and that was the one thing that we were always told, like, if you had a boat, like, you know, you couldn't go above a certain speed, which we didn't. But, you know, it was always about, like, you know, these guys are really curious. They're super friendly. You got to go slow because they're going to come up and see what's going on. And, I mean, this one did, and, I mean, scared the hell out of us, to be honest with you. It was like, oh, my God! It was like, run! But, you know, he was totally harmless. It was just kind of like, hey, guys, you know, we're all like, panic and freak out! Go, go, go! So you can see how it would be so easy for a propeller just to nick these guys or just hit them, you know? And then you get the snowbirds down there who all think they're part of, like, Miami Vice, and so they've got to go up and down the intercoastal at 10,000 miles an hour on their speedboats. You know, you guys have a hard job, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's for the animals. I mean, they just need to come up to breathe. That's all they're doing is trying to take a breath. And the amount of danger that they can encounter when they do that, you know, so again, it goes back to just education and understanding and just, I don't know, if we could all just be a little bit kinder to each other and to the animals,
right?
I think we'd be in a better place. But, you know, that can be a hard sell sometimes.
And, I mean, are there any serious misconceptions about manatees that you would like to clarify?
Yeah. So there are still people who think that they were, like, imported.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, that someone, like, brought them in a giant aquarium and dumped them in Florida waters, like goldfish or something.
Okay.
So that's for sure not true. there's also a myth that their fecal matter is really dangerous to the environment, or that that's what's causing all the nutrient inputs.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, they eat what's in the water, so they're recycling nutrients.
Yeah.
They're eating things that are already in the water. They're putting the nutrients back, and they're dispersed. And so that's another one.
Wow.
and that they're, you know, destroying seagrass because they eat too much of it, even though they don't go down to the roots unless it's, you know, some really loose seagrass.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So, yeah, their detractors definitely try to pin some things on them. So, thankfully, we're here. Someone tries to scapegoat the manatee to try to set people straight. But it's amazing how quickly stuff like that spreads, like wildfire.
Totally. I mean, totally. And the only thing that I ever heard about them was, like, stay slow because they come and visit. And that was, like, it, you know? But it is funny when you get these wives' tales, for lack of a better word. And it's like, you know, oh, my God, that sparrow will rip your heart out. And everyone freaks out, you know? And it's like, well, it's never happened before, but, you know, they said this, so therefore it must be true kind of thing. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's so funny. Every time you think maybe, especially the one about manatees not being native to Florida, like just when you think that maybe you stopped addressing that, it shows up again and you're like, really? But I don't know. But yeah, it's amazing how quickly, you know, bad information, in this day of information and everything being at our fingertips, the fact that things like that are
totally, totally. It's like, no. So you're involved with SaveTheManatees.org and the Save the Manatees Club. So what do you guys do?
We try to correct myths. we do a lot of education, outreach, advocacy. So everything from, you know, like I said before, talking to people that are renting boats and trying to make sure that there are that there's education being received by their renters, legislating in our state capital and mm-hmm. the federal government to protect our water and, you know, what we're doing on the uplands that influences the water. You know, you really can't protect manatees at all if you're not protecting their habitat. So a lot of what I do is trying to do that. We do work internationally, so we support conservation efforts in other countries where we're needed.
Wow.
Supporting rescue rehab. Unfortunately, we do have a number of manatees every year who are either struck by boats or caught in fishing equipment mm-hmm. or, you know, subject to red tides, like I mentioned, or from cold. And so making sure that there are the resources available for those animals to get the treatment they need and go back out in the wild. So, research, pretty much anything. If manatees need it, Save the Manatee Club is going to try to be there.
That's awesome.
That's just what we try to do. So we can't be everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you do what you can.
So let's say, you know, I mean, this is such a thing, like, let's say a manatee shows up at your doorstep that's wounded. Like, do you guys have a place, do you have, like, a holding pen or anything like that where you can help nurse them back to health?
So we don't, but the state of Florida has a 24-hour hotline. So anytime there's a manatee report, there's someone to answer that call.
Nice.
And there are a network of aquaria, zoos here that have what's called a critical care facility.
Cool.
So that when manatees are injured, and they're located in different areas of the state,
so that
hopefully the manatee doesn't have to travel too far. But we just have some amazing veterinarians down here and, yeah, a place for them to go. And, of course, it's also, you know, all the keepers and the staff, and whether it's a little orphan who needs to be bottle fed every hour or, you know, a 1,500-pound manatee with, you know, watercraft wounds. It's just amazing. I mean, talk about dedicated people, anybody who works in that environment and is just up caring for these animals 24/7 is amazing. So thankfully in Florida, you know, there is a place for them to go.
Good.
And in some other countries as well, we do a lot of work with a facility in Belize, which is the only rehab center in Belize, and what they can do off the grid in the middle of nowhere is
really
amazing. So thankfully we do have manatee hospitals here in Florida. Certainly we try to keep them from needing to end up in the hospital, but also making sure the hospitals are there when they need it.
And so, like, manatees, I lived in the Bahamas at one point, and there were an occasional dolphin that would come by or an occasional stingray or just, you know, aquatic life, basically. And there were so few people on this island that, like, some animals would actually recognize certain people. Like this one, I swear to God, this is a true story. I saw it. I promise you that I'm not lying to you. This woman made friends with a little tiny sand shark, and the shark would see her walking the beach, and he'd actually cruise alongside with her. And, like, he didn't care about any of us. George was all about Betty and only Betty. So, like, in your research over the years, like, are you able to recognize any manatees, or do they know you, like the local ones?
Well, I think that the way we recognize manatees, sadly, is from their scar pattern, from having been hit by boats. So that makes the scientist, biologist's job easier to see the individuals. As far as individuals recognizing people, I'm sure that happens, especially, you know, manatees who have had, long-term connections with keepers and things.
Yeah.
Now, for a manatee that is in captivity for a long time, there's a process that animal goes through to disassociate them with humans,
mm-hmm.
because you don't want those animals, you know, coming back. There was a manatee that was rehabbed in Belize, and it was amazing. I saw her when she was very young. We supported a lot of her rehabilitation and her tracking. We paid for something that would track her movements, a mm-hmm. device. And I was back down there again, and she actually just cruised through the village, and she parked herself right in front of this bar where and she was just hanging out there, and it just seemed like she liked the noise, or because of the time she had spent with humans, somehow that was maybe comforting to her. All this
so
is guesswork.
Yeah.
Really, we have absolutely no idea, but certainly I think there are certain animals that recognize. There are certain manatees, especially a couple in particular that had been in captivity who had an affinity for humans that didn't get extinguished before they were released.
Oh no.
Which can lead to some antics. So it's always really important, because again, you're not protecting them from the well-intentioned people.
Exactly.
There are people who intentionally cause harm or think it's funny to jump on manatees or whatever. So it's like the same reason that you tell kids not to talk to strangers. It's not because everybody out there is a monster, but a few people are.
Yeah.
Part of the message you try to get through to the manatees is like, you just keep your distance, don't go up to those docks.
Totally. Don't make friends,
Yeah.
Well, they're such a funny animal too, because they really. I remember there was like the new snowbirds that were moving down when I were there or was there, there were otters and turtles and like all kinds of animals, and like people are feeding the otter shrimp, and like all this stuff, and it was always like, don't feed the manatees. Mm-hmm. And people would get really upset about this, but I'm feeding a dolphin and an otter and a turtle and all kinds of other ridiculous animals that would literally show up at their back doors because they knew it was good, and this, trying to explain to people about, you don't feed the manatees because then they get friendly and then they get hurt kind of thing. And people really get pissed when you it's like, but I'm Dr. Doolittle. It's like, you're not helping.
Yeah, it's, people feel like they've made a connection, and again, they're well-intentioned, but it's not about you and the animal.
Yeah.
It's about everyone else and the animal, and it's about the animal, and so it is hard. That's true of so many animals. All those animals you mentioned, nobody should be feeding any of them.
Yeah, oh my God, forget it.
Certain animals, it comes with a higher fine because of, other laws that protect them, and I encounter people all the time, and they're like, oh, manatees, yeah, I give them water from my hose. And
you're
playful with people. You don't really scold them, but you're like, oh, don't tell me that. That's actually not legal, and this is why. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea. And again, it's like, well, I'm not hurting them, or I don't see what harm it could do. And so then you kind of walk them through some scenarios, and they get it. So I think just, trying to be gentle with those people, but
mm-hmm.
still, speaking up for the animals, because it is a bigger picture issue. That manatee or that turtle or that otter, it doesn't spend its whole day in your backyard.
Exactly.
And it's not safe in every other backyard. That's a hard lesson to get through to people, too. So we definitely do some work on that.
I totally forgot about the freshwater hose in the water. Oh, my God. Now that you said that, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And people are just like, but this is salt water. And I heard they need fresh water.
Yep.
Like, yeah, they do. But they are amazing. They're like a divining rod for finding fresh water. Animals, it's incredible. I live on salt water, and manatees come up here and they swim west and they find fresh water. There's a creek that drains, and that's where they go. And you don't want to interfere with their normal behavior,
no.
Their normal migration. Again, not just because it's illegal, but it's not what's best for them.
Yeah.
You know, wild manatees need to stay wild. Wild anything. Wild any kind of animal needs to stay wild.
Well, you didn't hear it from me, but you might want to go check out Big Pine Key because they're a little crazy with the corn noses out there.
Yes, I'm sure. Duly noted.
So we're coming to the end of this interview, and I'm really bummed out. I've had a great time with you, and I'm learning so much. This is really fun. What's something that you want to leave people with about manatees? What can you tell us that, you know, one of these things like, here's your chance, Katie, tell us what you need to tell us.
Well, I think, you know, because so much of what we do is education and keeping people engaged, you know, if folks want to learn anything about manatees, our website is a great resource, and it's savethemanatee.org.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people want to get involved, that's also a really great way. It doesn't matter where you live. We have, you know, email alerts we send out to people. There are all kinds of free resources on the website, like for kids, which are wonderful.
Cool.
For educators. So, I mean, just anything. I mean, manatees are, I mean, they're just wonderful, and they really need our help. And so anything that people are willing to do, even if it's, you know, buying something from the gift catalog. Back to help the manatees. So, or just reading something and sharing it. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, if your kid does a school project on manatees. I mean, just anything. Or, I mean, and, you know, all animals are special and important, and there's a lot of really good causes. But if you are interested in manatees, you know, we'd certainly love to have your support in any way, shape, or form.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, like, we always laugh about it. We're like, you know, the cute fuzzies get, like, all the money. You know, and manatees are cute, but they're 10 feet big. They're these enormous, like, water balloon-looking things, you know, kind of. And so they
yeah,
get the
people,
cute
people
factor
actually,
on solid.
Oh, you know, you marine mammal people get all the money. But you know what? If you give money to manatees, you really get so much for your dollar. Because, again, it's not just... we're protecting everything. We're
yeah.
protecting the springs and the waterways and the rivers. And, you know, it's like every dollar you spend for manatees helps safeguard Florida for everybody else.
That's
too.
Cool.
So anyone who lives here or visits here, I mean, really, if we're doing things that are negatively affecting manatees, it's negatively affecting all of
everybody.
Us and vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, people, you know, like, what do? I'm like, well, I pretty much protect your backyard.
All right, so be nice to me, okay?
Yeah, yeah. So give me some money.
Yeah, exactly. Pay me and hook me up with some manatee love. No, I hear
yeah,
you.
Yeah, manatees need lots of love. They are cute, but they can be a little misunderstood. And I think, just really understanding that we're the only problem manatees have. If we'd all pack up and leave, manatees would do just fine. So I think as long as we're here, we need to, you know, pay the manatee tax and
totally.
Give back to them a little bit.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for spending the time to talk to me and to educating everybody all about manatees. I've really, really dug this interview. I've learned so much, Katie. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. I love talking about manatees and helping teach people, so anytime.
Awesome. I will take you up on that in the future. I'll definitely check in with you guys and see how you're doing in the long run. And
Perfect.
For everybody
love
else,
that.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. I will be back next Monday with a brand new show. Until then, have a great week and take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.